The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 225.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hi, guys. Welcome to today's live stream. I am here somewhere. Not in Puerto Rico, I'll tell you that. I don't know if if you're subscribing to Rebel Capitalists, that other YouTube channel I have, you know the recent drama when I went to Puerto Rico and I was planning on staying there for a while until the Rebel Capitalist live event in June. And I was there for a whole, 24 hours. So in 36 hours, something like that. And I couldn't take it. I couldn't take it. It was, I had a lot of appointments set up there. I was actually going to potentially go out and talk to Schiff at his place, do an interview with him like I did with Hugh Hendry. You guys remember that one where I was out at his place in St. Bart's and we just did like a sit-down interview, a lot of fun. And I was going to do that potentially with Schiff, but I couldn't take it. So I won't go into great detail. Puerto Rico right now is basically a prison state. And just, in fact, after I left, Mike Maloney emailed me and said that they increased restrictions to the point where now restaurants can only stay open until 8:30 at night. And their curfew that was 11 o'clock is now 10 o'clock. And what's shocking to me is the people that are like, well, they're trying. They're a small island and they're just trying to do their best. Well, okay, maybe. But that's assuming that intentions equal results. And that's very rarely the case. I can almost promise you that they're not improving health at all by locking you in your house at 10 p.m. instead of 11 p.m. I mean, what are we doing? And then I don't know if you guys are following me when I went up to Idaho, where quite literally zero people are, we'll call it, mask compliant. Maybe a couple here and there, but I mean, you go in the restaurants I was going into in Sandpoint, Idaho, nobody, like not just the customers when they're eating, I'm talking about the waitresses, the cooks. I mean, zero mask compliance, yet somehow people are okay. You know, another thing that's interesting, and I'll get into the questions here, is I went up to Sandpoint, Idaho, because I've got a family member up there. And my family member has not been out of Sandpoint since this whole thing started. And if you went to Sandpoint right now, if you just beamed yourself over to Sandpoint, you wouldn't even know that the Cerveza sickness was a thing. Like, you have no way of knowing. There's a couple people that serve you at the coffee shop that were wearing a mask, but very, very, just an insignificant amount compared to what I saw in Phoenix, Arizona. And so I was telling this family member what it's like that I had to wear a mask in the airport and that they were announcing it nonstop to wear it. And then on the plane, I had to wear one. And that in Phoenix, Arizona, and in Tucson especially, that people were literally wearing them outside. She didn't believe me. She was just like, no, come on, that's ridiculous. And this family member, as you can imagine, they don't really watch the news. They don't care about that stuff. They just ignore it. They're like me. They despise it. So they just ignore it. They don't watch it. They just, all they know is their little world around Sandpoint, the little grocery store they go to, and their family members there going to the lake, going skiing. And I told her about how these things are, even in Arizona. I'm not even talking about California. And I didn't even mention Puerto Rico because I hadn't been there this, I was there a few months ago, but I hadn't been there yet. And she was just shocked. She just was completely floored that people were behaving this way. And she just couldn't understand why. Because again, the Cerveza sickness is no more of an issue in Idaho than it is. Like, go to the John Hopkins website and look at the reports. Idaho's, it's just the exact same, but yet zero compliance, zero lockdown, zero curfew, zero of these things. How is it possible that there aren't just streets lined with body bags? Like, because if you listen to anyone in the mainstream media, they would tell you that, oh my gosh, if you did that, you're inviting in something so horrific that it's just unimaginable. But you go there and there's no hospital overflow. It's just life is normal. It doesn't seem any different than 2019, to the point where my sister, by the way, my family member who lives there with her family, they've been there for 40 years, 40 years. So it's not like they just went there a month or, 2020, and they don't know anybody. And so they just hung out in a little log cabin somewhere. No, they know the entire town. They know every single person on a first name basis, which you can imagine by living in that whole area, Coeur d'Alene, Sandpoint, you'd know pretty much everybody there. So if my point is, if the cervasive sickness was a huge issue, they'd know about it. And not only was it not a big issue there, it was so not an issue that she didn't even realize the rest of the country and the entire world, for that matter, has taken it to a level of complete and total hysteria. So for anyone that wants to say that, well, we should just do this or do this or do this, because it's got to help, or it's got to improve this health metric or that health metric. Listen, just buy them a ticket, a round trip ticket to Sandpoint, Idaho. Let them hang out there for, it won't take them long. They can hang out there for 2 hours, but let them hang out there for a couple days. And I promise you, the fog will lift, my friend, and they'll realize that these lockdowns and these mask mandates, although masks in an isolated scientific case study may work if you're not touching your face and doing all these things, but as far as the mandates, they don't make any difference. The only thing they have is downside. They destroy the economy. They put people into a state of depression. One other thing that I'll tell you, it's interesting, before I get to the questions, is I just spoke with a gal that works for me in Medellin, and they're doing the whole, not the lockdown thing, but they're locking things down on the weekends there, which they didn't. They're just re-locking it down because they're getting the hospitals. Some of the hospitals are getting to capacity in Medellin. And oddly enough, where they're getting to capacity is not with old people. It's not with people who are vulnerable. It's with kids, with children. So therefore, since they're getting at capacity, they've got to lock things out because they can't take any additional cervasive sickness cases or anything else, right? Because they've got to attend to the kids. And I know this because her best friend, in fact, she has several friends that are nurses in the local hospitals. And so regardless of what you're hearing in the media, this is her friends telling her this. And it's not like they're big Trump supporters. She's in Medellin and they're Colombian. They barely know who Trump is. They could care less. And they could care less about what's happening in the United States or anywhere else. For them, this is not political at all, which it shouldn't be. But so how is this affecting kids? The cervasive sickness in and of itself is not. All the kids that are there are not there due to the cervasive sickness. They're there due to being locked up for the last year. They're suffering all of these negative health consequences, physically and mentally, to the point where they have to be hospitalized because they just haven't been able to go outside. You got 7-year-old, 8-year-old, 9-year-old kids who haven't been able to go outside for a year. And guess what? They're going to get sick. But they're not going to get sick from the cerveza sickness. They're going to get sick from the government's response to the cerveza sickness. So it's like, what are we doing here? Let's just assume for a moment that a mask works. Okay, great. But let's do a cost-benefit analysis on not only wearing a mask, but let's do a cost-benefit analysis on lockdowns. Let's do a... These people only see a perceived benefit. It's not even a benefit in reality, just a perceived benefit. And then they just completely ignore any type of downside, any psychological downside. I mean, think about I don't know where you guys shop as far as a grocery store, but I like eating organic foods and whatnot. So unfortunately, that means I have to spend once or twice a week going into a Whole Foods or a store like that. And you guys know as well as I do, you've seen the people that you're just minding your own business. You're wearing a mask for heaven's sakes. It's not like you're talking or spitting or anything like that. And you walk by someone in the aisle of a grocery store and they're just freaked out. You know, they're just like, they're trying to get as far away from you as they possibly can. Or my sister was saying the other day that she was walking down the sidewalk and with my niece, and this is in Dallas, Texas, and they're walking down the sidewalk and the people walking, they wouldn't even walk next to them on the sidewalk. They like walked way out in the street to like get around them. Do you honestly think that people in that mental state for over, let's say, a year and a half aren't going to have any downside? They're not, that's not going to affect them at all psychologically or even physically. I mean, come on. This is, it's just, anyway, it goes back to Puerto Rico. So that's, when I was in Puerto Rico, long story short, is I had to get out of there. I had to get out and it started to drive me crazy. So I took the next flight out. Thank goodness I got out of that place. And, I went online and I tried to find the counties in Florida. I know Florida doesn't have the lockdown thing, and I don't know if they have a state mask mandate, but I went to look at the counties that did not have mask mandates, and I tried to find the county that that has been without a mask mandate the longest, because I figured that's where the local culture, if you will be just more freedom loving, more independent. Just do what you want. If you want to wear one, great. If you don't, that's fine too, whatever. And so I stumbled across an area in Sarasota, Florida. And then I went down at the suggestion of my sister who lives in Dallas. I went down to North Naples up by Bonita Springs. And there is a grocery store there that, you know, a lot of times I think all of us, we look around us and what's happening in the United States and the developed world, and it's tough not to get a little sad and a little down, because you see the writing on the wall, you see the direction that the central planners are trying to push us, and you know that that's not going to be good for anybody long term, and you just kind of, you know, you try to ignore it, because if you dwell on it all the time, then it just puts you in a bad place mentally. So you just kind of ignore it, or just kind of hang around with your friends that are more maybe like-minded. But then, of course, you got to talk to your friend and family member, Fred, and that then you just walk away shaking your head. So it's tough not to have kind of a pessimistic view on the developed world longer term. But I tell you guys, there is reason, there are slight rays of hope. And one of those rays of hope is in North Naples, Florida. And it is a grocery store called Seed to Table. Seed to Table. When you guys get off this live stream, you have to check it out. You absolutely have to. It is the most incredible thing I have ever seen in my life. First of all, it's the size of a Bass Pro Shop. I've never seen a grocery store that's this big. I mean, it is massive. But they've got the first level, you go in there, and it's all grocery store. They got organic food. They've got everything you could possibly want. Not only that, I was there on a Saturday just checking it out. They had clowns for the kids. They have face painting. They had the clowns making balloon animals. They had wine tasting. They'll sit there and you can go to the bar area. And oh, yeah, they've got multiple bars. They've got a sports bar where everyone's watching UFC and just like a normal sports bar. That's up at the second level. They've got a taco restaurant, sushi restaurant, organic salad restaurant. They'll sit and make a drink and you can walk around the store grocery shopping with a drink in your hand while you're getting all your organic food. They have live music. In fact, they have like a little, just this little area that's kind of elevated where upstairs where a band can set up and they do live music up there. That's by that sports bar area. And why is there, they had a DJ that was up there that was playing music that you could hear throughout the whole grocery store. It wasn't like rave music, but it was like the Bee Gees and just a lot of cool songs from like the 60s and the 70s and stuff. It was just so awesome. And you guys have to check this out. I'll probably post this on my Instagram. So normally, I mean, you guys know that for the last year or whatever, every single time you go, especially a grocery store, you got that sign on the front door, mask up, mask up, mask up. Make sure, and they don't even tell you wear a mask. They give you instructions. Make sure the mask is over your nose, properly here, properly there. And if you take one step inside without the mask completely covering your entire face, they just scream and yell at you. Oddly enough, these are the people who condemn burkas. They condemn the use of burkas in the Middle East, but yet they want you to do literally the exact same thing now when you're walking into a grocery store. So you just get accustomed to seeing those types of signs. Not here. Not at Seed to Table. No. They've got a sign all right, but here's the sign. Attention customers, mask exemption guidelines. Those in our lovely government, and you can just already sense the sarcasm right there, right? Have all persons entering indoors facilities to wear a mask. I'm trying to read this backwards here. Okay, so basically what it says is they're saying that if you have a medical condition, then you don't have to wear a mask. But I'm reading here, they say it's against the Fourth Amendment for them to ask you about your medical condition. So they say, if you are inside not wearing a mask, we'll just go ahead and assume that you've got a medical condition and we won't bother you. And then it says, why are we doing that? And it goes on, you know, it says that they're like pro-America, like Uncle Sam hats. And the bottom says, because we're not socialists. It's got these people in like Nazi hats and stuff. And of course you go inside and nobody is wearing a mask. The cashiers aren't, the people preparing your food aren't, the bartenders aren't. So you would think that, oh my gosh, no one's going to go in there. Like, who on earth would go into that place? It's packed. I mean, it is packed. And it's not just a little teeny weeny health food store. This place is the size of a Cabela's. It's like a Bass Pro Shop. I mean, it is huge. It's almost the size of a Walmart. I mean, it is by far it is if you took the largest grocery store, like the largest Whole Foods you've ever been to, and triple it, you're still probably not at the size of this place. When you include all the bars and the restaurants and the live music venue, it's just absolutely incredible. So my point is that they're, regardless, see, what makes it difficult too is everyone in the mainstream media, especially, they're all of this one narrative, right? everyone in the entertainment business, this narrative, you just hear it over and over and over again. You watch the Oscars. It's everywhere you go. You get it pounded into your head, this narrative. And it's not just about the Cerveza sickness. It's about a move towards more and more and more central planning and having this woke culture and the and all this social justice and this and that. That's all you hear. So you start to assume that everyone on the planet Earth, especially in the United States, is crazy, except for you, or maybe just the few people that you associate with. I'm telling you right now, guys, we are the majority, in my opinion. Now, not people on this live stream know a lot more about the Fed and know more about the destruction that the Fed causes and interest rates and money and investing and economics and the repo market and QE. You guys know way more about that than any or than 99.99% of Americans. But listen, guys, there are a lot of Americans out there that want nothing to do with central planning. They want nothing to do with the government telling them how they can live their lives. And if you want an example of that, hop on a flight to Naples, Florida, and go to Seed to Table. And I guarantee you, if you are a freedom, liberty-loving individual, and you're feeling a little down, go to that place, and you will be inspired. You will walk out of that place like doing a Tiger Woods after he drains a 20-footer to win the Masters or something. You'll just be like, yeah, right on. Yes, yes, yes. You'll be so excited, and you'll have a newfound sense of optimism. So I think that's especially in the world we're living in today, and all the insanity with the Cerveza sickness and the assault, the constant assault on our personal liberties, that story and going over that was probably more important than answering questions tonight. But let me go and try to answer a few questions here before we're done. So first one, we've got Buffett is selling a lot of bank shares, which are normally part of his bread and butter odd in the context of rising rates. Do you think it is predictive of a solvency event? Honestly, Brendan, what I think it's predictive of is Buffett sees the writing on the wall with the central bank digital currency. And if you listen to Russell Napier, I think that it's a matter of time and obviously probabilities. I mean, who knows? There's no certainties. But I think that over the next 3-5 years, that the Fed will most likely adopt some type of central bank digital currency, which will allow them to extend credit to the average Joe and Jane on the street for their mortgage, or at the very least, they'll do more to micromanage the extension of bank credit, more regulations, more rules on the banking system. Because I think I totally see what Russell Napier is saying. And that if they do start to get significant inflation, they're not going to pull back the stimmy checks. Because once you build an economy around stimulus, that's your economy. And it would be like Venezuela pulling away oil. You're a one-trick pony. The American economy right now is in the process of being built around stimulus. That's our one-trick pony, if you will. So if you're putting all your economic eggs in the stimulus basket, you can't take it away, regardless of what happens with inflation. So Russell Napier's point is to reduce the amount of inflation, because they cannot raise interest rates and they can't stop the money printing. They'll do so by stopping the other way, the main way in which money is created, and that's through the banking system. Because as most of you know, historically, or at least for the last decades, the way that money, the majority of the money that's created is through the banks creating new loans. That creates new money supply, new M2, new broad money. So, and Russell thinks that there'll be a combination of more micromanagement and more restrictions on the banking sector, the commercial banking sector, and then potentially price controls like we saw in the 1970s. And that's how the central planners will try to reduce the amount of inflation that's being created by artificially low interest rates and the just massive quantities of stimulus that's being spent because they can't withdraw the stimulus and they can't withdraw the artificially low interest rates. It's like Schiff says, that's the monetary Roach Motel. I mean, Schiff nailed it with QE. He said, once you go down that, they're not going to stop QE ever. And they haven't been able to. And I think that I don't know that we're there yet with stimulus. I want to be clear. I mean, if they just stopped it tomorrow, I think that there's a chance that we could get back here. But the longer they do it, you know, if they did it for the next year, let's say, or the next 2 years, the harder it's going to be for them to withdraw the stimulus without it having serious negative consequences on the economy and potentially the markets. So my point is, I think Buffett sees that potentially coming down the pipeline, and he's like, okay, I don't want any part of the banks if they're going to be micromanaged. And the way that most of the retail banks make money is through lending. Well, if they're not going to be able to lend that much because it increases money supply and it's restricted by the governments, then that's not going to do well for earnings. So I would probably assume that's where Buffett is coming from.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Does the SEC 5 filing relate to the rehypothecation of treasuries between hedge funds and the repo market, or what other financial products are banks willing to accept in exchange for liquidity for hedge funds? I'm not sure. I don't know. I'd have to look through that to answer this question. I don't know the details of the filing. So the PPI was released for March showing 1%. Is inflation here to stay, in your opinion, or is this a product of shortage supply? Well, I think both. I think it's probably a product of a supply shortage, but I think the supply shortage is here to stay. So why do I think that? I think the probability is greatest that they are going to continue some sort of UBI, some sort of way to get money in the back pockets of the average Joe and Jane. And therefore, that will continue to distort the economy. The more distortions, the more malinvestment you have, the more misallocation of resources, the fewer goods and services, the less economic output you have. And therefore, by definition, if you're creating fewer goods and services as a society, you are poorer. You are not richer. Let's go. I had a discussion with Lynn Alden the other day. I'm sure most of you guys watched that interview. And I was just kind of thinking through some stories and some things that had happened to me when I was in Tucson. And I don't know if it's like this in your area, but it's impossible to get an Uber now in Tucson. Just don't even try. It's pointless. When I was there a few years ago, no more than 5 minutes. You could be on the most northern part of town up by Dove Mountain or whatever, and you can get an Uber in 5 minutes. Now, you're lucky if you can get one within 45 minutes. I told Lynn this story. I don't know if we were recording or not. True story here. The day prior to me going to, or the couple days prior to me going to Puerto Rico, I had to get a negative cerveza sickness test, because you need one to get into Puerto Rico that has to be done within 72 hours, but it takes them 24 to 48 hours to get you the test results back. So there's a very small window there. I had one set up on Sunday, and I couldn't go to because I couldn't get an Uber. And I missed it. The next morning, I'm like, okay, I rescheduled it, but I have to do it today. I just absolutely don't have a choice. And my appointment was at 10 o'clock, and I had to interview Mark Faber at 11 o'clock, at 11 a.m. It gets closer and closer and closer. No Uber, no Uber, no Uber. I had no choice, but I had to jog. This is a true story. I had to jog to the CVS to try to get my my test. And then it was like, I don't know, it was like 3-4 miles away. I had to jog there, and then I had to, as fast as I could, jog back to my hotel room to do the interview with Mark Faber, just sweating my ass off. And just, why? Because I couldn't get an Uber. What's my point? Well, obviously, that's a supply shortage of drivers. Why? Because Uber is having to compete with the government for workers. And the workers are like, no, why should I drive an Uber around and have to wear a mask or risk getting sick or whatever they believe? And I have to give hand sanitizer to all the employees. Gas, the price of gas are going up, so my margins are being squeezed. And then I'm being paid to stay home, and I had this windfall from the stimulus. You know, why should I do this? I'm not doing it anymore. So they don't have any drivers, right? This is a perfect example of how the government is distorting the real economy. And as a result, we're getting fewer goods and services, which is obviously increasing the price of the Uber rides, if you can get one at all. I mean, now you can't even get one at any price. So this whole last week, I haven't really thought about economics or investing at all, which, as you guys know, is very rare for me. My entire focus, especially after going to Puerto Rico and seeing the just complete martial law, and it's something straight out of 1984, a George Orwell novel. After seeing that, my focus has really been on how do I maximize my personal freedom and liberty, not at least for the next couple months. And let me buy some time here and try to figure this stuff out, because I've been studying history. I've been studying the propaganda used in Germany prior to World War II. I've been studying the book I've been just nonstop listening to this weekend has been The Road to Serfdom by Hayek. And I'm just trying to figure out what's our end game here. Because because if you think about it, and Tucson is a perfect example, I'm a guy that I'm not a billionaire or anything like that, but I have, compared to most people, I have a lot of resources, financial resources. I would be considered probably a quote unquote rich guy. But no matter how rich of a guy I am, my life is hell in Tucson. I can't get an Uber. I can't get a reservation at a restaurant. I can't live my life the way I want to live my life. Just the normal stuff, the normal things that you enjoy doing on a daily basis that make life fun, that make being a human being fun. You can't do it right now in Tucson, no matter how much money you have. So I know that it's fun to talk about gold and Bitcoin and stocks and this and that. And obviously, that's where my focus is going to be in the future. But I think we all need to remember that without personal freedom and liberty, the money doesn't make any difference. The Bitcoin is irrelevant. The gold is irrelevant. The size of your portfolio doesn't mean a thing if you live in Venezuela and you can't get out. Which proves the point that I try to make in my whiteboard videos over and over and over and over again. Which, as you guys know, that point is the wealth of a society is not measured by how many currency units are in everyone's bank account. That's not wealth. The wealth is the amount of goods and services the society can produce efficiently. And right now, it should be blatantly obvious to everyone in the United States that the amount of goods and services we have now is far less than it was prior to the government instituting the lockdowns they did in 2020. And it's far less than it was prior to the government's creating all of these stimmy checks and distorting the economy the way they have. So this is just a long way of answering your question, but I think it's important to really go over the details so we understand that, yes, it might benefit a few to get a check in the mail. I get it. I totally get it. But we have to look at the effects that has on the economy in aggregate total, not just in the short term, but over the long term. Because it's just like the people who look at the Cerveza sickness and only see one side of the coin, as far as a mask mandate as an example, or a lockdown. They only see a perceived benefit. Same thing with stimmy checks. Most people only see a perceived benefit. They don't sit there and scratch their head and say, okay, well, what are the costs? And if you look at these things, the costs far outweigh the benefits. They far outweigh the benefits. And that's my point. That's my point. So we've got to get out of the mindset of thinking that currency units are wealth. They're not. It's the goods and the services. So let's, if we're trying to predict what's going to happen to inflation, deflation, if we're trying to set up our portfolio and really maximize on these government distortions, we have to think through it in those terms. Just focus on the creation of goods and services. And, you know, I got to give a hat tip to Schiff, because Schiff is one of the only guys out there that talks about this nonstop till he is blue in the face. He talks about how important a society's ability to create stuff actually is. That's where we should focus. So if you're not listening to Schiff's podcast right now, make sure you do that. Regardless of what you think of his, you know, Bitcoin or whatever his thoughts are, listen, he nails it when it comes to understanding what creates wealth in a society. Let's see. Steve theorizes the Fed going to transition into long bond market. What effect will this have on short-term hedge fund liquidity to counterparty risk who is overexposed? Yeah, so you're so you've been reading Reddit, my friend. You've been reading the Reddit thread. I don't know that the Fed is going to I don't really understand the first part of this, because if you look at the Fed's balance sheet, they don't really have that many T-bills on there. They, last time I saw it, which was maybe a few weeks ago, they only had about 300 or maybe 350 billion worth of T-bills. They're not buying the short end of the curve. According to their balance sheet, they're buying the long end, or kind of the middle of the curve. So I don't know what data Steve is referencing there. I'd love to see data showing, you know, the contrary, because again, I'm just going off the Fed's balance sheet. Maybe I'm misinterpreting it. But let's see here. What effect will this have? So I don't know that the Fed's going, in fact, I think the Fed, that's why they're talking about doing their, well, they weren't, but some people were theorizing that they may do Operation Twist 2.0, which would be to buy the long end, sell the short end, to provide more liquidity for those hedge funds and those institutions in the repo market. But as far as the rehypothecation and the parties being exposed to the potential lack of liquidity in the repo market through T-bills, I mean, that's definitely a potential concern, but I don't know that I don't know that the Fed is currently buying the short end aggressively. I don't think they are. I mean, you've got to take that to its, I hate to get caught up on one question, but this is a really good question. you've got to play that out, right? So let's just say that there's not enough liquidity, and then what happens? There's not enough collateral, rather. There's not enough of these T-bills to go around. Well, they get caught with their pants down, and therefore they've got to buy T-bills at any price. That makes the price of the T-bill go up, the interest rate go down, right? And then what's going to happen is if there's any issues with the repo market, it's not going to function as smoothly as it otherwise would. Well, the repo market gives liquidity. You got two parties in there. You got parties that are borrowing cash, and you got parties that are borrowing treasuries to go ahead and short them. And then you've got the different maturities. You've got the T-bills, you've got the middle of the curve, you got the long end of the curve, you got everything involved there. But mostly it's T-bills when you're talking about the normal repo transactions for cash. That's like the pristine collateral that Snyder talks about. But you got to understand, anything that plugs up the system is going to create less bank lending. And if there's less bank lending, then that's less money that's being created. And then you have to weigh that against the money that's being pumped into the system and created by the Fed monetizing the debt and the government spending it into existence, the money. That's why they're always talking about the fiscal response, the fiscal response, the fiscal response. So my point in going down a little deeper into this is just to highlight the fact these are very complicated matters, and there's a lot of moving parts here, a ton of moving parts. And it's not as easy as just, well, the hedge funds aren't going to have access to liquidity or the pristine collateral, therefore this is going to happen. I wish it was that easy, but it's not. When will you start to make videos focused on life and financial practices only? Is what you always call go out off on a tangent, you throw precious experience that builds hidden videos. Yeah, you know, Lucas, what I'd suggest doing is subscribing to my other channel, the Rebel Capitalist channel, because it's just me just talking right off the top of my head about news events and kind of what's going on in my life. And that's where you're going to get a lot more of that content. When I'm doing a whiteboard video, it's very difficult to get the whiteboard videos under like 30 or 40 minutes. And I'm doing my very best. And I've got to be as concise as I possibly can. And you guys have to understand too, those whiteboard videos, usually only about 40% of the views on those whiteboard videos are from subscribers. The other 50 or 60% are from non-subscribers. So the non-subscribers don't really know me. They don't know my story. And quite frankly, they don't care. They just want to watch a video based on what the title is. And then maybe once they watch a few of those videos, then they'll have more interest in kind of these tangents that I go on. But if I went off on all those tangents during a whiteboard video, I wouldn't have as many subscribers. I wouldn't reach as many people as the bottom line. You've got to use those whiteboard videos as kind of like a gateway drug. I hate to use it in those terms, but that's kind of what it is. And therefore, you've got to just make them super concise and to the point, even though they're a half hour video. You got to make them as concise as they possibly can be. And then you're going to have a higher retention rate, and YouTube is going to going to be more friendly with the algorithm and push them out to more people. So anyway, that's why I can't do it on a whiteboard video. But if you want more of that, go to Rebel Capitalist, that channel, and you'll see tons more of it. Do you think mortgages are going to be bailed out again? Well, I don't know if mortgages need to be bailed out. I mean, maybe a different question that you should ask first is, are people ever going to have to pay their mortgages again? I mean, people haven't been paying their mortgages for a year. They haven't been paying rent for a year. Maybe some of you have, but a lot of Americans have not, which you want to talk about economic distortions. We talk about stimmy checks all the time. We talk about the demand side of the equation. We talk about incomes going up since 2019, which they have, believe it or not. So we always talk about that demand side, but we never really talk about the the expenses side. We're just talking about the income side. But think about it. The average American's income is higher today than it was in 2019. A lot higher. Yet their expenses, for most people, have probably been cut in a third. If you figure that housing is normally a third of your income. So their expenses have gone down by, let's call it 33%. But their incomes have gone up by 30%. But here's the kicker. And this is something that Schiff always points out. They're making more money, but they're producing less stuff. Because they're getting more money, not by producing and being more productive, but just by getting checks in the mail from the government. So you want to talk about just epic amounts of economic distortions. I mean, we are seeing it right in front of our faces. And we're just seeing the differences on the margin. Like with the story with the Uber that I told you about. Or I'm sure you guys have a story that you could tell me about what's happening in your local area, about having to wait long lines for restaurants or wait for this, you know, some sort of supply shortage. I'm sure you guys all have stories like that. But we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg right now. Wait, especially if they continue this stuff. Wait to see what the economy and what your life looks like in 2, 3, 4, 5 years here in the United States. It's going to be unrecognizable compared to the ease at which you got goods and services in 2019. All right, let me do some shout outs. We've got Wayne Smith in the house, Scott Como, Atlas, Moody the Millennial, Brandon Smith, Top Feed Coco, Wilden 22, Kylo Rado, Nuna Beeswax. I always like that one. Oh, Pork Barrel Investing in the house. Vinny Rodriguez in the house. John Oliver, Jason Kincaid, Arthur Larson, Les 1727, AMC 801, Xanticus, Zancut. Boy, that's a tough one to pronounce. Ah, you're making it hard on me. Tanya Hawson, Joy Lou, JNS, El Chomio, Josh in the house, Praddock, Fire and Ice. All right, guys, I've got to shoot over to the member live stream. I'd like to encourage all of you guys to check out RebelCapitalistLive.com. That is my live event, not just Zoom live, not Skype live, but live, real people, face to face. Where you actually shake their hands. Human interaction. I know, it's so such a novel idea. But that's going to be in Miami, June 11th through the 13th. We've got tons of fantastic speakers. A lot of your favorites from the Rebel Capitalist Show are going to be there in real life, face to face. So you're going to be able to hear them speak and get some insights that you've never heard before. Maybe have a drink. We're going to have 2 cocktail parties where you can mingle not only with the speakers. Maybe you want to talk to me. I have no idea why you'd want to talk to me, but I'll be there shaking hands, having some stiff drinks. But more importantly, you can really have some fun with some like-minded individuals, some fellow rebel capitalists. And in today's day and age, I don't think there's anything more important. There really isn't. And so my point is we've already sold over 300 tickets and I'm going to cap it right around 500 because the venue can only hold so many because they're doing theater style, but they've got to keep the seats 6 feet apart because of the regulations. So I can only get about 500 or so in the ballroom where we're doing the speaking. So we've got to cap it at about 500. So if you guys are thinking about going, you definitely want to sign up for that sooner than later, because like I said, we're already at 300 and, you know, we've only been selling tickets for maybe 3 weeks or so. So anyway, check that out and I will see you on the next video.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.